Hey folks, Alex Lokes here, and we are back for another episode of Classic Camera Revival. And one thing that often gets overlooked when using these older classic cameras is being able to maintain them, to keep them functioning in as best a way they can possibly be. So this month, we are past due for getting our cameras checked.
Coming to you live from Toronto, Canada, this is the Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to our show.
So, one of the best things to do, especially with older cameras, is to give them what's called a CLA, or a clean, lube, and adjust.
You had me at lube.
And for many years, we here in the Greater Toronto Hamilton area have relied on Roger at Camtech for his absolutely wonderful service. And unfortunately, he has passed away. So the film photography community truly mourn the loss of...
Moment of silence for Roger.
I heard moan of silence. I'm sorry.
Wow. How many churches are you not welcome in?
I think Mike spontaneously combusts when he crosses the threshold.
N plus one.
But of course, there are plenty of things that you can actually take care of yourself. And one of the biggest things, and we have touched on it before, is de-squeaking your cannons.
Yes.
And that involves using a syringe and musket oil. But, James, sure. As you mentioned before, you got the Yashica YF in a non-functioning state. So what sort of steps did you go through to get that camera up and running?
I will talk about that. But I want to mention, like, any time I buy a used camera, I kind of go through a ritual when I get home of thoroughly cleansing the thing. Because God knows how many hands and eyes have touched the viewfinder, etc., and on all the buttons, and who knows where the thing's been. So
that's why you got an eye infection. You forgot to clean the camera.
I did, actually. I'm just recovering from an eye infection, actually. And anyways, that's another podcast.
Photographer's gonorrhea from the camera.
Oh God, really, Mike?
I had to go there. I told you before I had to go there.
Oh boy, Donna, you're so lucky.
Wow. Mike's lucky.
Yeah.
If you get I'm not gonorrhea. Dead yet. She hasn't killed me.
Anyway.
If you get gonorrhea, sometimes you have to go there.
Moving right along, in the realm of cleanliness of your cameras, I like to, whenever I buy a new camera, I like to get the body cleaned, and I like to clean the camera from top to bottom, because it's a really good way, number one, to figure out how everything works in the camera, if there are any issues with it that need to be addressed.
When you clean the bottom, do you go from back to front or front to back?
If you're a girl and you go from back to front, you're going to get a bladder infection, I think. So, yeah. Anyway. Again, as we're moving right along, I don't know how you baited me into that one, but and I don't know why I used the word baited, but somebody.
He's a master at it.
Thank you.
Oh, shall we start again? Take two. And here's James talking about.
Anyway, thoroughly cleaning a new-to-you camera, when you get it, is, I think, a great idea.
It's gone off the rails.
Oh, God. Okay, because it will give you an opportunity to find out how all the mechanics work, if there are any issues with the camera. How I like to clean my cameras, I use basically two things, like any standard lens cleaner, or like household cleaner, Windex glass cleaner, any all-purpose cleaner. I spray it on the rag and I wipe the camera down. Then what I do, what I find works really, really well with old cameras, are these Mr. Clean Magic Erasers. And they
I've heard good things about
them. They are really, really good. If you actually look in that drawer behind you, you'll find a half-spent magic eraser that I've used to clean up quite a few cameras. And that's it right there.
More than half used.
Yeah, you can see how much dirt comes off of these things. And they're ground in. And what I find, too, like, especially when you have the... the rubber rings, the grips, the focusing rings.
Oh, yeah.
They tend to like get saturated with the oil from your fingers, and they pick up all kinds of things. I find using that that magic eraser brings it, like, removes all of that built up grunge and oil and all that sort of things, which is really, really good. So that's what I started to do with the Yashica YF when I got it, was first clean it.
What do you think of the Lysol wipes? Are those a good idea or not?
I think you could. They're a little too wet. So if you just get regular Lysol, and good God. If we only had a camera here.
I'm asking an honest question.
Anyway, there's a little too much moisture in them, and you don't want them. You don't want it to be. You know, obviously, you don't want moisture. You know.
Getting into.
You don't need a buildup on your camera.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to use the word penetrate, but
penetrating helps prevent sticky shutters.
Oh, good Lord. Anyway. So what I find, if you're going to disinfect your camera, you know what? Rubbing alcohol, isopropyl alcohol on a cloth or Q-tip, more than adequate. I shop at a store locally in the GTA called Sayall Electronics when it comes to cleaning supplies.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're an electronic surplus store. And if you have a similar store local in your area, pop in there, buy electronics cleaner, electronics. Q-tips, which are narrow point, and they have like the sort of bulbous typical ones you're used to.
Yeah,
and that will get into some of the more intricate mechanics and circuitry and that sort of thing.
Especially the gap between the pentaprism and the shutter speed dial. And
there's also
the shutter
alcohol wipes that you can get from electronics that are quite nice as well.
Exactly, and the alcohol is highly, highly pure, so you don't get the residue. So you want to go at least, like, if you can get like 99.5% isopropyl or whatever the number, I think it's something like that, 99%.
99%, yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to get the white residue.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that tends to happen. So I go out, buy those things, go to your local gun shop. For you folks in the U.S., there's probably one on every corner.
Or if you're here in Canada, Sale, actually.
Oh,
and
there you go.
Bass Pro Shops has quite an extensive amount
Canadian
of...
Canadian Tire. There's another one there.
Yeah. Buy gun oil in a precision oiler. You can buy little gun... They're called patches, and they're little white cotton swabs, and you can use those to get in. They're like cut to the size of your fingertip.
So you can
dab it around. That's what I like to do in terms of cleaning. When it comes to maintenance itself, for me, it depends on the camera and how courageous I feel.
Oh yeah,
that I want to. How much I want to open it up. For the Nika, you know, it's fairly simple, and I wasn't intending to look at any of the mechanics of the camera or make any adjustments or anything. I just wanted to remove some parts to get everything access to clean it. So, you know, that's about as far as I go when it comes to mechanical cameras. Otherwise, I'll take it to an expert. One of the biggest challenges of camera maintenance these days when it comes to these vintage cameras is finding a repair guy that's good.
And trustworthy
and still alive.
Yes.
You know, they are literally a dying breed. And, you know, there's a handful of them that are taking on apprentices, but I don't think there's enough to go around. I know local, like I just had my Hasselblad, I think we talked about in the previous episode, I just had that fully overhauled by a fellow by the name of Joe Vieira, who is pretty much the only great guy. He's the only guy in Canada that can do it.
Yeah. And I need to take my Hasselblad kit.
And get this, he's an actual tech at Fuji Canada.
Yeah.
But he's Hasselblad trained.
Yeah.
He's factory trained.
Yeah, he's totally Hasselblad trained, but his regular job is tech at Fuji Canada.
Yeah, he's actually Hasselblad, Cenar, and Fuji trained.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, so, you know, he's quite a, you know...
Jack of all trades.
Yeah, when he retires, that'll be a big loss to our community. We do hope to have him guesting on one of our future episodes.
Absolutely.
So that'd be a good thing. You know, if you're not sure what you're doing, find a good local trustworthy shop that has worked on these guys. Generally, they're going to have, at the very minimum, if they do have hair, it's going to be salt and pepper. So, you know, if not fully gray, like these are going to be some dinosaurs that you're going to have to unearth for some of this stuff. And when it comes to large format and shutters and that sort of thing, you know, there's a lot of theories on different things about how to service like shutters. I'm talking about like old Copal shutters and that sort of thing.
Or
and,
even the old Kodak Flashmatic shutter. I know that once my 203 Ektar shutter dies.
Yeah. Like, that's it.
That's it. You know, I'm done.
You know, one of the things, you know, they'll say lighter fluid and soak, you know.
Yeah, naphtha.
Don't do it. Don't do it. The lubricants are part of the mechanics of these shutters. And if you remove the lubricant,
you're done.
You're done after 30 days.
Yep.
You know, so don't do it. Find a professional. Ship it off to whoever you need to ship it off to. Wait your 6 to 8 weeks or whatever it's going to take. Otherwise, you're going to lose a classic piece of equipment. So, you know, some things I know better to just not touch. And you need to a lot of, you know, you'll figure that out on your own as you go through the journey of collecting these things. So,
yeah. And one person within our group that has an experience of waiting a long time to get his camera fixed is John Meadows, and you're a medalist.
The medalist, yeah. And I was one of the lucky ones. A guy named Ken Ruth in the U.S., he was the medalist guy. And the medalist is a very complicated, very touchy, fragile camera. You don't want to be apprenticing on it. He's now retired. So when my medalist goes, hopefully not for a long time, it will be a shelf queen.
Yeah.
Because that's a beautiful camera. One thing I wanted to add, because we had a lot of good suggestions so far on camera maintenance, is one thing to do if you're putting a piece of photographic gear away for a long time is take the batteries out.
Yes.
Especially, like, I find flash units that take, like, the AA size, like alkaline, those things will split and start spewing out white powdered acid.
Oh, yeah.
Flashiness tend not to like that for some kind of reason.
It's
like,
not good to have white stuff in your flashes.
No. I'm not even going. I'm not going to touch that one, at least not yet.
But if you want the white stuff, you're going to have to touch it.
Yeah.
But in the battery chamber, if it's leaked out of the batteries, can you use like an eraser to clean it properly?
Vinegar.
What would you suggest?
Well, the thing you can. I've used an eraser, but the thing is, quite often, especially if it's been there for a while, the damage is done.
Yes.
Yeah.
The corrosion. True,
yeah. The corrosion is getting to the contacts and your dose. Yeah.
There's a couple tricks you can use. You can buy electronics cleaner or corrosion remover, or you can just mix up a solution of one part baking soda, two parts water, and that will counteract the acidity, the corrosion. It won't repair any damaged metal, obviously, but it will remove the corrosion.
But taking the batteries out costs you nothing.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. No, but the thing is, hypothetically, someone listening to the show goes off to a show, buys a camera and or a flash or something, opens it up, and the things, you know, the batteries leaked all over the place.
So vinegar.
White ick all over it and stuff.
Vinegar works.
You want to clean it
properly. Vinegar works. Yeah.
And use gloves.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do that. You know, for me, it's I always forget about them in my flashes, and that can be a very, very expensive mistake.
Yeah, I've done that.
Considering the price of flashes nowadays, so.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the alkaline solution that's leaked out, just actually a funny little note on it. I actually took some, scraped it out of one of my flash units that I had picked up at a show, and I mixed it with a little tiny bit of water. And I was just curious. This was during a really experimental phase with film developing. I literally took that. I literally took that alkaline solution, spread it on a piece of film, and watched it develop in front of my eyes. It was the weirdest thing.
Oh yeah. One thing that I actually have a huge resource is actually working in the IT industry and having worked that. I don't have to actually work unless there's actual work to do. So I've actually used...
Are you guys hiring?
I've used equipment at my job at Sheridan College to do a lot of cleanup of cameras, from using deoxit solution to remove oxidization on battery contacts, electronics cleaners. Feels really weird having all these cameras pointed at me.
Press conference.
I know. And probably one of the best things is compressed air.
Yes.
And
but you have to be careful with compressed air, because if it's not straight up,
I don't use the canned stuff.
Not the XL stuff.
No.
Okay.
We actually have a proper air compressor in our office.
Okay.
With a hose. We got it fixed. It was spraying moisture everywhere.
Yeah, no, exactly.
There are hose in your office?
There's a bunch of hosers in our office also.
And spraying moisture everywhere.
Yeah, because no, that's a good tip to not use a compressed canned air just on electronics. Because it will get moisture onto your equipment.
Absolutely. But unfortunately, not really as useful anymore since Fuji canceled FP100C. But your old...
Bastards.
Type 100 Polaroids. I'm talking specifically about the automatic land cameras. And they take a very rare, very expensive battery. But I've actually adapted several auto land cameras to take AAA batteries. And those cheap LED flashlights that take the three, perfect for like your auto 205s. You basically have to solder on the holder, and you're good to go. And I had a bunch of friends who had all these things sitting around, and they saw my work with the auto land camera, like, oh, my parents have one of these, or my grandparents have one of these, I'd love to use it. So I'd say, like, yeah, just ship me the stuff. And at that time I would go to Radio Shack, buy either the two AAA holders or buy the cheap LEDs with the three, and it was just such an easy fix.
Well, speaking of adapters, I am a big fan of the Canto MR9 adapter for those old 625 batteries we can't use anymore.
Oh, yeah.
I think they average, and again, I get mine off eBay from Japan, probably about $35 to $39 Canadian.
Which isn't bad.
Yeah, not bad. But yeah, you sit there going, well, that's a little on the expensive side. Well, figure out how many wean cells you're going to go through. And then it will automatically wind up paying for itself in a few short years. And then
two or three.
You could pop in your generic Energizer 357 silver oxide batteries you can find in any supermarket or drugstore.
Yep.
And another maintenance tip I do is always checking and replacing light seals and the bumper foam with the mirror. I use a kit from a gentleman in Texas named John Goodman, and I know some people around here, oh, get the foam from like Michaels. Well, you know, I don't have quite the steady hands for slicing. John Goodman has it all pre-cut, ready to go, complete with instructions, and a little bamboo tool, so all you really need is a Q-tip and some, of course, rubbing alcohol to get the old stuff out. Mm-hmm. And
I agree with you on that. Like, I've
done the light seals in my Hasselblad magazines with a kit I got from California.
Yeah.
And it was like I ordered it, it shipped, and it was there 3 days later.
I do buy bulk foam like from eBay just to have, just in case there's something that I'll end up with your camera that you can't get a pre-cut kit from. But for me, like, there's some things that you cheap out on and there's some things you don't. And if you can get a pre-cut seal kit, get it. I mean, like,
yeah, especially John Goodman's. I consider his like the Cadillac of light seal kits, especially with around the back.
Yeah.
The stuff he uses, it's not like the usual open cell foam with the
it's a nice closed cell stuff, and it's
friction fit.
Yeah,
so you don't have to worry about it. Otherwise,
adhesive and all this crap, and it's like brakes on your car. Some things you don't skimp on.
No,
you know, and if light leaks into your camera, what's the point?
Yeah. You're screwed.
Yeah.
There's also kits that you can get if you want to have fun with your camera, where you want to reskin your camera.
Oh.
And now I don't know if this is something that, you know, people want to do, some people do, but you can get different colors and stuff like that, and faux skins and so on and so forth, and there's hundreds and hundreds of different types you can get. Unfortunately, off my mind right now, I can't.
Did he just say foreskins?
No. There's
at least it wasn't me that said it this time.
We'll cut that part, so to speak.
there are different.
So we're going to cut the foreskins?
Leather copies and that sort of thing that you can get that are pre-cut to all the different types of cameras. So if you actually want to kind of, you know, dress up your camera, which some people enjoy doing, I don't particularly like it, other than getting maybe a nicer you know, a nicer grain leather for my camera. I've done it to one. Or if you need to get replacement parts for covers that are missing from an older camera or something like that, like on my AutoCord, I had to get some to replace that. So
right, yeah.
And that's very easy to, if it's pre-cut, just put in yourself.
When it, like repairing cameras, I've actually done a Canon QL25, and I actually wrote a blog post on taking it apart, cleaning the shutter, the leaf shutters, and I've also done it with an Argus C3. Now, I know why anyone would bother trying to CLA an Argus C3. Maybe it's beyond them, maybe not, but at the same time, they're decent cameras to, I find, learn on how to repair a camera. I find the C3, they're super cheap. There's millions of them out there. And even if you screw something up, you can probably fix it.
Absolutely. I actually have an Argus C3 that I got from Trevor that I found a lot of internet material on, and I hope to actually work on it when I get the courage to.
Well, I think I shared it with we've got our own.
Yeah,
we have our own chat that we for scheduling for CCR and stuff,
and more.
Which gets a little
among other things,
absolutely. But one
you
of the
think
things
this show is crazy. You should read some of these posts. Oh my goodness,
they're generally Mike's posts.
Oh come on, you are
you're the one
writing
banned from Facebook, not us.
Touché. Okay. But I was actually really impressed with this blog post that I found was a complete total disassembly of an Argus C3 and full overhaul.
What actually inspired
me. Why would you overhaul an Argus C3?
Because you can.
You can buy them by the skid for $20.
For a Harry Potter cosplay with an actual working camera.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's very true.
I'm just being facetious, but
yeah.
Argus, the thing
scary
is...
Scary enough, though, I have seen on Fleabay, like, some of these going for, like, upwards of, like, 175 and above, because people are going, ooh, ah, it's
that is
a
the
camera.
Hipster effect on film.
Oh, I know.
Absolutely.
But only if they're minty.
That's a whole other show.
Oh. Yeah.
But it's film. It's supposed to look good.
Mm-hmm.
the funny story is, my Argus C3, the film advance nut that is not the one that's behind the camera, but the one that's actually on the camera... Mine is missing, and I have no idea what happened to it. I had two C3s. I gave one to my my cousin, and the one I kept it specifically because it did not have this nut. And so when I work with this camera, I actually have to roll the film all the way onto the take-up spool and go backwards, which it's a challenge on its own because when you're advancing, the film locks from frame to frame. So when I'm rewinding, I have to listen for the click, and then I have to re-advance the film so that it's proper frame spacing.
That seems so strange. It's like a gear has been reversed, like it's on the wrong side of the cog.
Yeah.
Yeah, except at the same time it has, because it's actually got an advanced lock, so you just go frame by frame by frame. Mm-hmm. It's very rudimentary. Mm-hmm. And
well, it's an Argus.
It's an Argus, absolutely, but... I get a lot more comments on this brick because I didn't reskin it. I actually removed the front skin, so now it's shiny. Although I never polished it, so it looks like it went through an acid bath. It's like got pop marks and everything. But I get more comments on that camera when I take it out, and more people pay attention to it than almost any other camera other than my Rolleiflex.
Take some steel wool to it, and you can what's that thing they call it? Steampunk it, yeah.
Oh, like a rat rod kind of?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, another thing that, especially us around the table, we really like films. And unfortunately, the trouble is that some film goes away. And you can only really get it expired. Now, there is nothing wrong with shooting expired film. And some films take being expired better than others, but one of my favorite films, and unfortunately it was canceled probably before I was even born, is Kodak Panatomic X. And what I really like about it is, again, a lot of people say, oh, you know, you have to take it down a stop for every decade it's expired. Well, Yeah, no, that's not true with Panatomic X. The best expired films, I find, are the slower the better. So Panatomic X is ideally an ISO 32 film, so I just shoot it at box speed, no matter how old it is. And Bill has done a lot of work with expired Plus X.
Yeah, well, recently expired Plus X, not super old. I think right now my victory lap is still with the dearly departed FKEY 100. I have a batch that expired 3 years ago in 2015.
That's not expired.
Well,
relative. I'd call that short dated.
Yeah,
short
dated. Probably. But I think it was probably made in 2010.
Ish. Less than a decade. We're still good.
Yeah. I've also shot with 18-year-old Ilford Pan F. So, again, instead of doing it at 50, expose at 32 ISO. It's definitely a tripod situation and a process in Rodinal to control the highlights. Ever so gently.
Oh, yeah.
One film that I really like to shoot expired, and it has a reputation for just lasting forever, is Verichrome Pan.
Oh, yeah.
The oldest roll I have shot of that, and this was about maybe 3-4 years ago, I shot a roll of it in 127 format, and it expired in 1964.
Okay.
And, yeah, there was a little bit of fogging. But punching up the contrast a bit, it was great. Yeah. And I also want to echo, Alex, your comment about the slower speed films being really good for using expired. I got a few rolls of film from a friend of mine a few years ago, including, I'd forgotten I had it, some Tech Pan.
Nice.
And it expired in 1970s. So this is pretty old stuff.
Yep.
And again, I developed it. Like the film, it was so old when I opened to use it when I opened the package and like the foil, it smelled a bit funny. But there was a bit of fogging, a bit of discoloration, yeah. But it was still amazing. So now, Royal X-Pan, 1250, 30 or 40 years old, don't hold your breath, don't shoot it at a wedding.
I've shot some Tri-X that expired in the 70, and I shot it at full speed, which I really shouldn't have. Especially Tri-X, I should have knocked it back. No, wait, hold on. I did knock it back. I knocked it back to 100, and I developed it in X-Tall, and it looked terrible. I mean, it wasn't a big deal. I shot some digital images. I was at the a museum in Cleveland at the time, but I still posted the images. They looked old and funky, but still, I was not pleased.
One thing I've read is that the theory behind why the higher speed films don't last as long, even if you keep them refrigerated, etc., is they're more susceptible to cosmic rays.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Yeah, because I've shot Tri-X. 1970s expired. It came in one of those wonderful, what are they called?
The packs.
The pack film, yeah.
Yeah.
And I had unreal results with that stuff.
Well, you were also shooting 4x5.
True, right?
I was shooting 35mm.
Like, you know, format does matter when it comes to stability, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And like, the larger the format, the more stable it generally is. And it's
That was going to be a question of mine. Is like the more surface area, is it more stable or less stable?
Look, I don't know the technical reason or whether or not it's my imagination, but in my experience, I find that expired...
Medium format
and large format film tends to hold its contrast and tonal range.
Yeah.
And a density a lot better than 35mm, and I don't know.
Just watch out for Ilford. I've shot some expired Pan F, and it's gotten almost this molted look to the images. I mean,
like, keep in
not
mind, like,
terrible, yeah. But...
You have to understand the genesis of film itself, right? Like film is an actual natural... I guess, sort of chemical reaction,
yep.
If you will. Like, it's the growing of silver halide crystals,
right?
Emulsifying them in a silver and gelatin base. And gelatin is a natural product, and it will deteriorate over time. So if you think of all the uncontrollable, I guess, nuances of actually manufacturing film. Mm. It can vary batch to batch.
Right.
When it gets old. But, you know, interesting stuff. I have no idea on the technical reasons why. Maybe if there's someone out there that could share with us some of that knowledge, that'd be great. But,
yeah, that would be interesting.
I do notice in my experience, though, the larger the format, the more stable it's, or, you know, at least tends to, you know, the image quality seems to be better.
Well, right. Large format film, it's thicker. It's a thicker base. Maybe so that has something to do with it.
You know.
Unless you're shooting the Rolly RPX stuff, which is paper thin.
Yeah. Or there's just, a pain in the ass.
There's
to load.
Just more surface area and. It's easier to manage the moisture and, well, I guess, who knows? Yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah, because I find that with, because John was touching on Verichrome Pan, and I second his him on it. It's a wonderful, wonderful
most stable
film.
Black and white film I've ever come.
Oh, absolutely.
However, I find there
Plus
is
Plus X does such a good job when it's expired.
Plus X, absolutely. Yeah. But I find there's a cutoff with Verichrome Pan because I've shot all the way back from early 50s. Some early 50s expired, and it was abysmal, absolutely abysmal. Now, I'm not sure on the storage of it, but then again, at the same time, I've shot Verichrome Pan from the early 70s that I literally found it sitting in a box at my grandfather's place and
there you go.
Picked it up and it was perfect. But this one from the 50s that I shot, actually was a couple of rolls, they were actually abysmal, absolutely terrible. I almost had no usable image from it. So I'm wondering if it was just a reformulation, because I know that Verichrome at one point was more of an ortho film versus a panchromatic. Pan.
Yeah. That's right. If you get a thing of Verichrome, you really want the Verichrome Pan, because then you got the panchromatic.
Yeah.
Verichrome is orthochromatic. I've not shot it. I've heard of it, so I don't know what light spectrum it's not sensitive to, but probably red, like a lot of those early ortho films were. I did get my hands on, through the FPP, I got a roll of nitrate film. So I didn't shoot it. I took it to the Milton Fire Department and said, hey, I got a roll of nitrate film. Can we light it on fire? They sort of went, can we call the chief in? And I went, yeah, sure. So we went out to where they actually train to put down fires, and they light it on fire. And if you've ever seen Inglourious Bastards and the scene in the movie theater, you'll know what I'm talking about. And this was just a 20 exposure roll, and it went up like a double loaded musket.
That is what you call non-safety film.
Yes, that's
that,
right.
Yeah, that's why Kodak, their films said right on the side.
Safety film. Yes. That's right. Will when they burn. Started producing the acetate and more modern, the polyester based films.
Like we're joking about it, but you know, in the spirit of a public service announcement, if you run across any nitrate film, it's like it can spontaneously combust.
Don't buy it.
Yeah, like I said, I took this role to a fire department.
Yeah. Kodak Super X
and
is
it doesn't
nitrate.
Change after you process it. So
that's right.
don't. It could still be, you know,
it's just as flammable.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you come across like stuff in a shoebox at an antique shop or something like that, don't do it.
Just tell them that they should just take this to the fire department and dispose of it.
Absolutely.
Go look on YouTube. You can find videos of old reels of 35mm. Film, like the nitrate film set on fire. Once it starts burning, it's not stopping.
It doesn't stop. Think Centralia and be done with it.
It's also part of the reason why there's a lot of old films in Hollywood that they had to like switch over when they started thinking about updating and saving old
movies.
Well,
it's interesting. I heard you can, if you go to the Eastman Museum, they still do screenings on nitrate films.
Yes, they do. Yeah, so they do. They do.
Interesting. I would sit by the door.
I remember seeing the documentary on that, and people love the look of those old nitrate motion picture stock, but again, now, like, I think there's an archive somewhere in a salt mine where they keep.
That would probably be the best
archive of motion pictures stock from Hollywood, where I guess it's already been duplicated on much more
stable,
durable medium, or digitized. or durable medium. And it's now, the originals are in a salt mine somewhere because it's a nice, stable environment where, you know, even probably even just the tiniest spark in the place goes boom.
Well, that's what really gets me is because if you consider a lot of old cinema houses, they were running these films in front of like a ridiculously high wattage bulb.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So, and tons of heat, absolutely.
Yep. Or carbon arc.
And yep, I don't know if anybody has ever been to a theater when the film's jammed. And within seconds, it melts. So, mm-hmm. And that's acetate film. So imagine nitrate. I couldn't even imagine sitting there in the movie theater having this film run. All of a sudden, it jams. And within seconds, hearing alarms going off because the booth is now burning out of control.
It makes me surprised that the theater side of the Tivoli Theater in Hamilton survived and the front section didn't.
Did they not actually, with some of the old movie theaters, have like big concrete boxes which actually were the where the projector
sat
was
in? Yeah,
and so
probably
and it would be completely. I mean, yes, unfortunately.
Oh, I'm sure they built that after the first fires.
Yeah,
exactly.
I never got into the projection room at the Tivoli. The one time that I had a chance to, we actually found what looked like a drug production lab in the.
What's
in
more flammable, nitrate film or the drug production lab?
Yeah, a meth lab. Yeah.
Would
and
you like to make a meth
I got
lab?
Out, and when I got home, I called Crime Stoppers. So
good for you.
And well, now they know where to find you.
Well, back to, I guess, expired films. There's a few out there that you should look for. I guess I guess when we say expired, I guess that's also synonymous with no longer produced.
Yep,
Lomo style.
Yeah, and that's not Lomography. Which, by the way, I went to the Lomography store last weekend, and they have absolutely no stock of any 120 or 35 millimeter film in their flagship store in New York City. So it was very disappointing. But anyway, I tend to look for TechPan. So John had mentioned TechPan. TechPan is technical. I like to say almost panchromatic film. It's red sensitive, so you know, you want, it does render blue skies, but you know, a red filter would help it quite a bit. Box speed I think is 25, and you can shoot it anywhere from 16 to 320 and still get fairly good results. Plus X Pan's always been a favorite of mine too, and Kodak, if you don't want to go the way of FUG, you should relaunch that film. What the hell anyone's going to do with P3200 is absolutely beyond me, but hey, whatever floats your boat. And by the way, Kodak, Ilford's had 3200 Delta out for centuries now. So,
and they never took it off the market.
And they never took it off the market. So why don't you bring back something good, for crying out loud? And that's, you know, that's
Panatomic X.
Yeah. And that would be Panatomic X, plus X Pan. I like Technodoll. I have about 8 rolls of Tech Pan left in my collection to be shot. And the thing with Tech Pan is you do need Technodoll liquid developer. And Alex, I think you can probably talk about it. there is an HC110 or a T-Max.
There are actually quite a few options for Tech Pan. I think the last time I shot Tech Pan, I've done it in Rodinal, which have produced beautiful images, and also T-Max developer, which have again produced beautiful images. And I also have a few rolls of Tech Pan laying around, and thanks to Bill, some Technodoll developer that I can actually use. And I can't wait to actually get into, especially this summer when I go to Photostock.
Well, I think we should.
I hope to bring a few rolls with me to shoot.
We should definitely do a group shoot and soup of Tech Pan.
Absolutely,
definitely. I think I've got a roll or two sitting
now. One developer I'd recommend for not only for the Kodak Tech Pan, but for the Rollei ATP 1.1, which is a film you can still get. That's quite similar. It's not cheap, but the Rollei RLC, like it stands for Rollei Low Contrast Developer.
That's right. And
it works beautifully. It's just
a photographer's
cheap.
Formulary has a clone of Technodoll available too. That is a that's a modern
photographer's
one.
Formulary, by the way, is a like
great resource. I get all my PyroCat HD there and my raw chemicals
such a great resource
from them. Yeah. And fast shipping and fair prices, even with the exchange rate.
So, you know, we haven't really talked too much about C41 or E6 when it comes to expanding film.
If you like color shifts.
If you like color shifts, but...
if color shits.
Never mind.
that stuff won't be too bad.
I have some experience with some expired, and again, it had the Lomography brand on it. They released, I guess somehow...
About, the F-squared?
Yeah, the F-squared 400. Yes. Which is really just Ferrania Solaris 400. I bought 10 rolls last year, and it was probably from a master roll that Lomography bought from Ferrania just before they went bust over a decade ago. So they tossed it into a freezer, and then they decided to cut it down into rolls of 36. And it was I just immediately grabbed 10 rolls to play with. And a lot of people are saying, how do you shoot that? Simple. I don't expose it box speed. With C41, when we're looking at 400 speed, I go, okay, take it down to 200 and see what we get. And I loved what I got. Like, the colors are bright. Like, it's like it hits you in the face, and it's a little on the grainier side than maybe what you're used to. But again, it's like it was sitting in a fridge for over a giant, I guess, walk-in fridge for over 10 years.
I actually ended up with two rolls of Ferrania Solaris from Angela. One of them being the 200 speed, one of them being the 400 speed. And the color palette is definitely different from what I'm used to, with mostly shooting my color film from Kodak. I would actually put it more, not really Svema 125, but kind of a blend of Svema and Fuji.
Oh, that sounds about right. Yeah, I was quite happy with it, and hopefully Ferrania, I hope you're listening, someday you'll get your act together and do the Solaris 400 again.
Absolutely.
And I said, someday.
Let's just keep Ferrania focused on
P30.
Slide film?
Yeah, P30 and their slide film, P30. Definitely.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Definitely.
Let's not distract them. They know they have enough distractions.
Shiny object and squirrel.
Yeah. I find a lot of time with expired color film. Let's more look at slide, because I've actually shot a fair bit of expired slide, and I've gotten everything from low contrast to absolutely nothing on the film.
Oh yeah, I've shot some Astia and Provia in 4x5, and I've even developed it myself, being extremely cavalier with both temperature and timing, and have gotten fantastic results out of expired E6.
When it comes in particular to C41 or any color, C41 and E46, the risk that the unknown part is, how was it stored?
Right. Absolutely.
It's critical.
With any expired film.
More so critical, I think, in the color films. Black and white tends to stand up a little bit more. Storage has less of an impact, I guess, if you will.
At least it doesn't have dyes to deal with.
Like, relative to color. And in particular, if color film isn't stored, isn't cold stored, you lose contrast and density.
That's right.
And that's the biggest problem. And, of course, color shifting can happen, but, that's, I guess, another factor. Whereas I think with black and white, it tends to be more contrast than it does density when it comes to expired films. I bought 18, I think 18 rolls of Ektachrome 64D, expired in 1989. And I might as well have burned 100 or probably 200 bucks by the time it got to my door.
I've shot some straight Ektachrome 64, and it had blue shifted, which is weird for Kodak, because Kodak usually leans more towards the magenta end. And also, when it comes to scanning already exposed and developed slides, I had a chance a while back to scan some slides that my paternal grandmother shot. And I actually have the camera she shot it on also. It's an old Instamatic. So, and I could always tell just by holding it up to the light, even if the slide mounting was backwards, I could tell a Kodachrome slide from a Ektachrome slide.
Oh, absolutely. Of course.
The Ektachrome slide was magenta. The Kodachrome slide was perfect. And you'll probably put a comment saying, oh, well, it was probably properly stored. And, well, yeah, it was. but I was poking around an abandoned college in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I found a completely scattered block of box of slides. And the Kodachrome slides, despite being exposed to
weather and everything,
whatever weather they have,
UV rays, everything,
Knoxville, Tennessee, yeah,
fine,
perfect. Yep. The ectochrome, completely and totally purple.
It's all about chemical stability.
Yeah. That's right.
Things, right? So,
speaking of purple, I had a roll of early 2000 expired E100 GX. It was already in the camera that I had, and I basically just picked up the camera, it was already loaded, and I went and I just thought, what the hell? It's on frame one. Shoot it. So I did. Every single image, and I gave it a little bit of a bump in speed. I kid you not, there was no color other than magenta. Wow. Every single frame was purple. And I'm sitting there looking at it, I'm like, there's no color information here other than purple.
Purple, yeah.
So I basically should have just developed it in
hey,
black
and white. Is that where Lomo Purple came from?
Who knows? I think even Lomo would have been embarrassed by this film.
No, they wow.
You could have started a new genre.
Yeah, purple film.
Your purple period.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Prince film.
Yeah. But at the same time, speaking of which, I've also shot 83 expired. I remember it very clearly because I shot it in my Bronica, and I was actually going side by side with a Detrola K. And I was out in Niagara Falls, and I was shooting the ektachrome, and I was rating it for around, I think, an ISO of 50. And other than a loss of contrast, the images were there, and were just beautiful. It's unreal when slide film, even though it was so heavily expired, I still got something out of it, and it just makes it worth it. They're beautiful.
I came across a roll of 1972 Kodachrome film of my mother's that I shot in about early 90s, and that I had some recent Kodachrome, because Kodachrome was still around in the 90s, so I wanted to do a comparison, and this is one of the first times I've ever experimented with old film comparison to new film. Shot both, you know, similar circumstances, same place, same lighting, same camera. Turned out exactly the same. And one was 20-year-old film at that time, so.
Yep.
Yeah, that really doesn't surprise me considering the way Kodachrome is built.
Yeah, that stuff was amazing. May it rest in peace.
Well, that's about wraps it up for this episode. My name's Alex Lokes, and saying get your cameras tested because that Portra 400 VC might end up being VD.
Ooh.
This is John Meadows. You can always tell a house without the CCR. Their cameras are clean. Their brains are filthy.
This is James Lee. Expired film, unlike fine wine, does not always age better with time.
This is Donna Bataxi. Keep that film rolling.
This is Mike Bataxi. And remember, when you get a new-to-you camera, wear protection.
Mike, you dropped your penicillin.
At least I didn't get gonorrhea in the eye.
This is Trevor Black. Remember, if it's fungus, ugh.
It's a fungus among us.
This is Bill Smith, and I'm keeping my mind clean on this show. I'm not working blue this episode.